and welcome to Good Luck High Five, episode 584.
That's right. You're listening to a podcast that's for you if you watch The X-Files. Whether you've only recently gotten into one of TV's best shows or you've been watching it since it first came out, we're here for you.
I'm one of your hosts, Agent Maria.
And I'm another one of your hosts, Agent Megan.
And on today's show, we are really going to go all out on our X-Files love.
Yes, of course we'll have some of our usual segments like The Randomizer and Mulder Text Theater.
As always, as we always do.
But we're also going to be talking about some of our favorite episodes. You know, usually we do deep dives on things like Scully's fashion through the years and why does it not really change?
I love those episodes.
And Agent Doggett, love or hate. But people have always asked us, which ones, you know, what do you think of what is considered the best of the best?
Yes, absolutely.
So we'll be talking about why we love some of the best of the best of the X-Files, finally.
I'm so excited to go over all this with you. And I can't thank you listeners enough for being with us for more than 10 years of X-Files episodes.
So many. You wouldn't think that there would be enough material to talk about weekly for 10 whole years. And yet the show has that much depth to it.
We could go on for another 20, I think.
Honestly, I truly believe that we could endlessly talk about the X-Files.
Well, good thing we have a podcast about it.
Truly. And thank you to everyone who makes it happen by being a patron over at patreon.com/glhfmagic. Magic, of course, referring to the magic of television.
Of the X-Files series. It's a magical thing.
It is a truly magical thing for everyone who has been a patron for any length of time. But thank you especially to our new patrons at $5 a month or more, Aaron, William, and Jimmy.
Yay! Aaron, William, and Jimmy, thank you so much. It's time for your puns that you get from $5 or more. Aaron, hey, thanks for sharing your hard-earned money with us.
Yes. William, will ya be our friend?
That is excellent right there. What's the last one?
Jimmy.
Jimmy? Let me...
Jameen being cool? You're welcome, everybody.
Jimmy, do you mean being cool? That's what you ask yourself every day in the mirror.
Truly.
Thank you so much, everybody, for being a patron. You can get a shout out just like that by going to patreon.com/glhfmagic, donating at $5 a month or more. $10 is our influencer level. We're going to have some new gifts for influencers coming up very soon, which I'm very excited about.
Remember, if you're an influencer, you get to influence which episodes of The X-Files we talk about.
Yeah, that's right. And if you're a producer, our favorite level, you get an extra long episode every single week where we talk about, you know, just any kind of random topic that we want to talk about. And we're getting extra random today with our producer episode because we're going to talk about this new game we've been playing called Magic the Gathering.
You're going to get to hear about it and what we think of it.
I mean, it's like so addicting.
It's really fun.
I'm so excited to share with you some of that, but that's only for our producers in our extra length episode. For everybody else, it's going to be your normal X-Files episode, just like it is every week.
Absolutely. Thank you as well to Card Kingdom, cardkingdom.com/GLHF. We don't know why they've sponsored a podcast about the X-Files for, at this point, 8 or 9 years, but we are so thankful that they do.
Absolutely. They know good quality podcasts when they hear them.
Exactly. And they know it doesn't matter that they are a website that is mostly about this card game that we're now into called Magic the Gathering.
Yeah. Unrelatedly.
But
yes.
It doesn't matter that that's primarily what they do and do so well.
Absolutely.
A good podcast is a good podcast.
Hey, you know, Casper Mattresses, they sponsor podcasts that aren't just about beds.
Wow, you could not have put it better myself.
Can you imagine that podcast? What would they talk about? Well,
I don't know. I bet you that there are some podcasts
about beds.
Podcasts
look it up.
About beds.
I'm going to keep talking about Card Kingdom. They just had a spring sale, so it's a good idea to follow them on social media, at Card Kingdom, all that kind of stuff, to find out when their sales are happening. But they've got great customer service, fast shipping. They've got an excellent trade-in bonus if you have draft chaff from that game, Magic the Gathering, laying around that you want to trade in for store credit and get a bonus on that and then turn it into cards that you actually want. There's so many things you can do in that game, which I've just learned about that I'm excited to talk about in our Patreon. Our producer length episode coming up later on. But if you like Magic, anything related to Magic, Card Kingdom is a stop for you. You can check them out on the internet at cardkingdom.com/GLHF. Have you found any bed podcasts?
Okay. First of all, if you Google podcasts about beds.
Yeah.
Mostly what you get are podcasts that are about helping you get to sleep.
Oh, yes.
But there are three bedding podcasts.
No, there are not.
The Sleep Retailer Podcast. Join the editors of Sleep Retailer Magazine as we speak with leading bedding industry professionals.
Oh, it's one of those shows.
The Fam Audio Stories, mattress industry audio stories from the world's first audio everywhere media hub for the bedding business. And House of Vera, Vivid Hues, Prints, and Patterns. Shop House of Vera for handpicked cotton.
How many episodes can they possibly have?
I don't know.
I mean, you can really talk about anything for any amount of time, but this seems like they're reaching.
This is really, yeah, stretching.
Yeah.
And we say that as a podcast about the X-Files that's been on for a decade.
We've really been, we've gotten down into the minutiae. For example, we had a whole week-long series about Scully's glasses.
Yes.
Which, thank you all for bearing with me in that episode. I just feel like there's the series, it was so much to talk about.
Yeah.
And then we had another month-long series on Scully's pumps. That was important.
And then we had, which was separate from our episode that was about Scully running in heels.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Two separate topics.
Yes, because her footwear and her ability to run in said footwear are two different things.
Yeah, and it's an important skill.
She's a champ.
She's a champ. She kills it.
She's an absolute champ.
Speaking of killing it, you all remember our episode that was about David Duchovny's jawline and how it murdered someone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That thing is sharp.
And of course, then we had the month of autopsies.
Oh, yeah.
Which is where we just got in
best
depth
autopsies.
On every autopsy that Scully has done.
There's a lot of them.
Hundreds.
Hundreds. Some say thousands.
Some say thousands.
You know.
So many.
Because who's to say how many autopsies she does in Bad Blood? I think it's a lot.
Oh, it's so many.
So we can't really know. So we had to estimate. Anyway, cardkingdom.com/GLAJeff. It's time for the randomizer.
We've used a random number generator to give us a random number between 1 and 218. And then we're going to tell one another the title only of the episode. And we're going to try to recall or just completely make up what we think happened in that episode of The X-Files.
Based on the title alone.
Yes. You all know this game. We play it every week.
Yeah, we play it every week. So do you want to go first or second, Megan?
I'll go first.
All right. The name of your episode is Wet Wired. One word.
What?
Yep. When I saw this, I was like, is that an X-Files episode? And reading the synopsis, I mean, I've seen them all so many times, but I mean,
yes.
Reading the synopsis, my memory was slightly jogged, but truly not that jogged.
I'm going to go ahead and say Wet Wired. I know that this is already...
Do you want the season and the where?
Ooh, yes,
the
that would be very helpful. Yeah, give me the season.
We're allowed to ask for the season and the placement. This is season 3, episode 23, which would put it as the penultimate episode of that season because in the 90s, as we all know, they were out of their minds and made 24 yes. episodes of a season of television. Ooh,
okay, I don't think that I'm going to be correct in this, but okay. I think I'm going to say that Wet Wired is the episode where Skinner has to like clean up a murder, and then Mulder is following him around, like knowing that Skinner is cleaning up the murder at the behest of the smoking man.
Oh, interesting.
Do you remember the one that I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
Okay, so there's an episode, and again, I don't think it's this one, but I feel like this Wet Wired gives me the vibe that this is a Myth Arc episode. And so I think that it's not going to be like a Monster of the Week. I think that it's Myth Arc. And it just, there's something about the name that makes me think that it's the one where like the cigarette smoking man. The one that I'm thinking of is, I think, after Scully's cancer diagnosis because like when Skinner owes him a favor or whatever. But I will just say, I'll say the one that I think that it is since I'm already into it. It's like, you know, so Skinner like owes him a favor.
Yeah.
And so the cigarette smoking man is like, you have to go and like be cleanup man for this murder. And Skinner's like, since he owes him, is like, okay. And so he is like cleaning up. He's like hiding this murder that happened. But Mulder is onto him and is following him around. And it creates like the distrust between Skinner and Mulder.
Oh, sure.
That's my guess.
Okay. Well, you're right that it is kind of a mythology episode in that they tacked it onto the end of this episode.
All right.
This is the episode about where people are killing people that they don't think are, they think it's somebody else when they kill them. So, for example, I think the cold open is a man kills his wife, but then he he tells him, I didn't think it was her that when I killed her. I thought it was this man. And it's some kind of mind control situation where they're being mind controlled to commit murders, you know.
Yeah.
But they're just seeing things in their brains and it's not actually real.
Yeah.
The lone gunmen do make an appearance in this episode. So, you know, they mean business. The cigarette smoking man's in here as well as the informant X in this episode, too.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
A banger.
A true banger that I absolutely have zero memory of. I mean, I truly, truly do not remember this. And I should because it's like almost a season finale. Interesting.
I know. All right.
Okay.
Your episode is The Goldberg Variation.
Oh, goodness. The Goldberg Variation. Is this episode the one where the person's gift / curse is that they are always lucky?
Yeah.
Yes! Yes,
it's that one.
Yes! Boom!
Absolutely it is. It has Willie Garson.
Who's that?
I don't know. You would know him when you see him.
Oh yeah, from Sex and the City.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Anyways, he's in it. He's Henry Weems,
oh,
the man who is always
that.
Very, very lucky.
The reason that this sticks out in my brain is because I really wanted to write a superhero movie about somebody whose superpower was luck, and then somebody said, Maria, that's already been done. It was done on the X-Files, and also there's a character Domino. And I was like, well, never mind.
Yeah. I really enjoy this episode.
Oh, it was great.
It's a great episode because, like, right, the whole idea is that the whole episode is a Rube Goldberg machine to get the kid the kidney.
Oh, it's so cool.
Oh, it's really
great. And there's
great
Rube Goldberg machines in the episode that they actually had to physically make, which I think is so fun.
It's really, yeah, it's such a fun episode.
And I mean, like, something that rewatching The X-Files recently for, like, no reason reminded me of is that how fun would it have been to work on this series? And, like, your job one week is making Rube Goldberg machines to shoot. Your job another week is lighting for black and white. Your job a third week is doing a time travel episode back to the 1940s. Like,
yeah,
it would have been so fun. And you got to do it in Vancouver, which is a cool place.
It's a cool place. We like Vancouver.
Until they move.
We've talked about Vancouver a lot.
Oh, we have. We've even had our episode about real estate prices in Vancouver.
Yes. Which was back to back with our episode that talks about the episode of the X-Files that takes place in Minnesota, and they drive through a literal forest between the airport and downtown.
Beautiful.
Like the middle is like a middle of nowhere forest.
You're like, why do all these locations look suspiciously like Seattle?
And like and like the sheriff or like the I think it's literally like the sheriff is like, you know, this is a slow place. People still don't lock their doors at night. And you're like, we're a city. We live in a city, you guys.
It's a major metropolitan area.
This
I don't know about you.
It's a major metropolitan area. Thank you very much.
I don't know about you, but I was personally sad when the series moved to LA to start filming.
Oh, yes.
Because then everything was sunny all the time.
I know. And it's not, The X-Files is not a sunny show.
No, it is
not.
It
is a rain show.
It's a rain show. And I appreciated all the rain that always was happening.
Yes.
And the gray skies, the clouds.
Exactly.
Every hospital looked haunted.
Yes. Because they all are.
Hey, everybody. Maria here. Just wanted to pop in with a quick note on this next segment where we talk about our favorite X-Files episode. I get emotional in one part of the segment, which leads me to not be entirely clear in what I'm trying to say. So I just wanted to offer a pre-apology to anybody who's in the south of the United States and listens to us. I was talking generally about the stereotypes which are played up in the episode, not people from the south generally, which are, there are so many lovely, wonderful people who live down there. So I just want to get that out of the way. Anyway, yeah, you'll see me and hear me get emotional for the first time in the show in 11 years of recording. Enjoy. Moving on to our main topic this week's episode of Good Luck High Five, which is obviously because we're like wishing you good luck and giving you a high five before you watch any episode of The X-Files.
Absolutely. And it's kind of like if you were going out and investigating these things, you would want some good luck and a high five before you took off.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about our all-time favorite episodes. So these are the true bangers that we personally love. Maybe they're not the ones that get the most critical acclaim.
Although some of them are.
Although some
we
of them
certainly
are.
Will.
But some of them, you know, fly a little bit under the radar.
Yeah. All right, Maria, I think we should kick it off by just saying, like, because, right, people can, shuffle around kind of, like, the top 3 to 4 spots a lot.
Sure, yes.
What is, in your opinion, number one?
Oh, wow. This is so difficult for me. Being the ex head that I am, wait, that's probably not what they call themselves. I will caveat by saying I haven't rewatched all of the series in a long time. But I watched through it all in high school and have been watching it, you know, on and off again since then. So my number one is one that does have some problems, I'm not going to lie, but I do think, to me, it is pretty emblematic of the joys of the X-Files and the interesting things that it can do and what it can be, and that's the postmodern Prometheus.
Oh, all right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Number one, what about you?
I mean, mine is, I think, I am of the opinion that, like, yes, there are many excellent episodes of the X-Files that in any other show would be the top one.
Yeah.
But I think that there is nothing in the world quite like Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose.
Yes, that one I think is notoriously the number one.
I think that that episode of obviously I'm going to pick it, and I don't care that it's obvious because I think that it is that good.
Yeah.
Like, it is an incredible episode of television.
Yes.
I cried watching it.
Absolutely.
There are some jokes that are some of the funniest.
That's something else the X-Files does so well. It takes itself deadly serious, which is perfect training ground for comedy as well. But also, it, like, the characters have such levity to them. They have such a great time doing what they're doing. And they are able to insert humor in such wonderful, beautiful ways in almost every single episode that just cuts it enough that you have a great time, even if it's dealing with heavy stuff, like Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose.
Exactly. Do you know what? Wow, I found out something about the X-Files today.
Wow.
Which is very, you know, because it's, we know so strange. Much. We've been, we talking about it for so long. Much. That it takes place in St. Paul.
This one takes place in St. Paul? Wow.
In St. Paul, apparently.
That's incredible.
You also know that part of what I love about this episode is that I love that Scully does just take the dog home.
Okay, let's give a recap for people who, I know you've all watched.
We've all seen it. You're listening to this podcast because you love it and know every episode by heart. But in Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose, there is a man, Clyde Bruckman, who has premonitions of when people will die.
Yeah.
And he finds his neighbor's body, like, in the dumpster, and there's, like, a whole investigation. And then there's also a brief thing with, like, a fake person who says that they can tell when people how people died.
Great.
But Clyde Bruckman can actually do it. One of the bits in it is that, like, there's a very, like, an older, a very old neighbor who has a little Pomeranian. And he's like, he has a vision of, like, the Pomeranian eating her body after she dies.
That scene, that image will not leave my brain.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of, like, oh gosh, one of my very favorite parts of it is right, like, they're just driving in a car, and I forget why it comes up, but they're, like, talking about how someone might have died, and Clyde Bruckman and Mulder are talking, and Clyde Bruckman is like, he's like, erotic asphyxiation, like, hell of a way to go.
Yeah.
And Mulder's like, you're telling me. And he's like, wait, why are you telling me?
So good.
It's so, like, that is, it's maybe my favorite moment of the X-Files because it's so fun. It's
so meta.
It's so, so funny and meta. It's really, really wonderful. Wonderful.
What season and episode number is this for people watching at home?
Oh yeah, this is season 3, episode 4.
Yes, excellent.
Anyways, it's just so good, and it's very, very sad. Like, it's also, like, heartbreaking. He's exhausted. You know, he's exhausted by it, and he, like, the
can
end
you
of the episode,
imagine having that knowledge?
No,
it'd be, it's horrifying. Terrible. Yeah,
exactly. Also, I could go on about this episode for forever. One of my favorite, another one of my favorite parts from it, right, is, like, there's a moment when Scully is talking with Clyde Bruckman, and I think he's like, do you want to ask me? Like, do you want to ask me? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, you don't die. Right? Anyways. And it's just, like, this really beautiful moment. Oh, it's very, very good.
Everybody, anyways, check it out. I know you've seen it, but it's time to watch it again.
Yeah. Anyways. And, yes, and then at the very end, he does kill himself, and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah,
and then he leaves the dog outside so the dog doesn't eat him, and he leaves a note to Scully being like, "I hope that you'll take this dog and that you won't hold it against him what he did. He's just a dog," and then Scully has that dog for a long time.
Yeah, So cute.
It's and that dog is so cute. It gets eaten by... I'm so mad that they kill off Queequeg.
Oh, yeah.
But anyways, everyone knows I'm a huge Queequeg stan. I am the number one Queequeg stan.
Your Twitter handle is Queequeg stan.
Queequeg stan.
Obviously.
Available.
Obviously. It's got to be. It has to be available.
But you don't think anyone else out there is taking the... Queequeg stand. Okay. Maria, tell us more about Postmodern Prometheus.
Yes, the Postmodern Prometheus. This is the fifth episode of the fifth season. And in my opinion, you all know this, that season 4 and 5 are the strongest episodes overall of the X-Files. And this one is top of the pile for me. Normally, I'm a mythology lover. You know that about me on this show.
One of our big divides.
Yes.
On the show.
I love the mythology episodes. They were always my favorite. So I decided I wasn't going to pick a mythology episode. I'll get into that in my second favorite episode. yes, this one is so singular. I love when TV shows, it's all in black and white, do a black and white episode. Mm-hmm. Voyager did it famously as well, which is also a very fun episode. And Chris Carter talked about filming this episode and saying he just fell in love with the idea of filming it in black and white. And that lighting for black and white was also going to be such an incredible challenge. And they took it on, and the episode, everybody, the cinematography, the lighting, it is just
really, really good.
Beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely beautiful. So the plot of this episode is, it's very funny in that it starts with, there's a cold open naturally, but David, Mulder gets a call about, he gets a letter from a woman who says that she woke up pregnant and she didn't know what happened. And then it happened again to her. So it happened twice. The first time she was like, oh, that's weird. I was missing for 3 days and now I'm pregnant. And then the second time it happened, she said, it's weird because I had a tubal ligation. So it's impossible.
Yeah.
And Scully is like, absolutely not. Why are we going to investigate this? This is so stupid. Like, these people are just lying. Their greatest, this is set in the South. Their greatest want is to be on Jerry Springer and to like exploit
and
that.
Also, notably in this, she learned, like, the woman learned about Mulder from Jerry Springer.
Yes, because there was a wolf boy. That's also very funny in the car because she in the letter, the woman's like, I saw you on the Jerry Springer show. She said you came into her house and looked at her wolf boy. And Scully just like looks at him like you went to some like wolf boy mom's house. Yeah. And you know, and I just love that because it establishes such an interesting inner life of these characters too, that they're off doing their own crazy BS like when they're not at work. And they're like, okay, yeah, of course you went to go see wolf boy mom. And this, by the way, this woman, she was originally written, this was written for Roseanne Barr, by the way.
Oh.
But she couldn't do it because of scheduling concerns and for somebody else that we'll get into later in the episode. They have to solve this case. How are these women in this town ending up mysteriously pregnant after they say they see a monster, and they black out? It's just it's a very comic booky, very shticky kind of Frankenstein retelling. There's a mad scientist. He's doing weird experiments on animals and he wants to advance. There's so much lightning strikes in the show, lighting up people's faces. And it turns out that his father actually had also been experimenting along with him, I guess kind of unbeknownst to him, and had engaged in some experiments, which resulted in kind of a misfigured young man who's 25 and he has two heads, two mouths, and he's been hiding in the basement. And his grandfather, it's a little weird. We can't really untangle this myth, has been raising him and keeping him in the basement and not letting him interact with anybody.
Yeah.
But the old man has been going to homes and like secretly experimenting on these women by impregnating them with like his weird science syringe goo that is a mixture of animal and human DNA, trying to make a mate for his son, just like Bride of Frankenstein. So that obviously is problematic, which they don't address in this episode, and they probably should. But what I love about it is the ultimate commit to the bit of this Frankenstein campy retelling of the story, putting Mulder and Scully in this ultimate fantasy universe, which has a score that is punctuated with Cher songs.
Yes.
Because the son loves Cher because of the movie Mask. And... for me, the end, I just have to talk about it.
It's one of the best endings of an episode of television of all time.
I 100% agree. the song Walking in Memphis, covered by Cher, which if you haven't heard it, you should listen to it. It's absolutely fantastic. Plays, and Cher was going to come on and be in this episode, but decided not to do it. However, when Cher saw the episode, she really regretted it. And she was like, oh, this would have been fabulous. I should have done it. So a Cher impersonator, somebody plays Cher. And it's a fantasy ending. So the episode ends with the son, the disfigured son, being arrested. His father is dead. The mad scientist is arrested. They're in cop cars. And because obviously that's illegal. You can't do that.
Yeah.
No matter how much you've been misraised. Mulder's like, it shouldn't end like this. Like, this is not the ending of the story. Frankenstein needs to go out and get his bride. And Scully's like, well, this isn't a book, Mulder. This is real life. And these are real crimes and they need to be prosecuted. And Mulder goes, where is the writer? I want to speak to the writer. And he turns and looks around, and there's a kid who has been writing a comic book this whole episode.
Yeah.
And
about the monster, the
Great Mutado. It morphs into a shot of cars driving down the highway. Cher's Walking to Memphis comes on, and it turns out that Mulder and Scully have taken this kid to see a Cher concert.
Yes.
And Cher comes down from the stage and dances with the kid, and we see Mulder and Scully dancing as well, and it fades to a comic book finish, which is just so... gosh, okay. I'm getting emotional because this episode hit me different recently. Okay. So I was thinking about the people in this episode, which are like Southern bumpkins, yeah. Which in today's day and age, we would call them like Trump supporters or bigots or whatever. And they chase after this monster with pitchforks, just like Frankenstein in the book.
Yeah.
And they come to him. Sorry, I've never gotten emotional on this show in 12 years of its history. Oh my God,
which is wild, but there's a lot of emotional stuff.
They're like, oh, he's not a monster. He's just a guy. And they come to accept him and love him. And the mothers who have these monster babies, they go on Jerry Springer and they're like, we love these babies. Why wouldn't we, you know? And it just made me think like the phrase, I want to talk to the writer, made me think of like, how people in the South and like, you know, people who are conservatives and whatever have this life of like feeling persecuted and persecuting those who they think are against them. But like, what if we change the ending? And what if like we just got to accept each other? And what if this monster hadn't like had been forced to live in a basement? Why the monster within us, right? Gay people, right? You know what I'm saying?
Like, don't make the monster, don't make your monster live in the basement
and have to listen to Cher and only watch the movie Mask. And I was like, I didn't watch it with this underpinning so many years ago.
Yeah.
But it was just so moving. Anyway. Obvious problems with the episode, but overall, what an interesting, beautiful work of art that we get from the show. Even just watch the ending, everybody.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my number one.
It's, yeah. Wow.
There you go.
I didn't even cry about my number one. Am I really a fan?
What's coming in number two for you?
Okay. So, I think like, I mean, my number two is actually probably Bad Blood. Bad Blood is an incredible, another, like, it's mostly, it's more straight comedy than a lot of the other stuff.
It's a comedy episode. They did like two comedy episodes.
Yeah. But I just like, it's the episode where it's like the classic told from two perspectives at the beginning, right? Like Scully is recounting. And one, it does start with being horrific, which is like Mulder staking a kid.
Yes.
And then being like investigated for it. And Scully telling her version of what happened and then Mulder telling his version of what happened.
And they're so different.
And they're very, very different. Very like, funny. Right. Everything from, of course, it has iconically Luke Wilson as the sheriff. Oh,
that's right.
And is in this and like in Scully's version, it's Luke Wilson.
And he's really hot.
He's so hot and like so charming. And then in like Mulder's version, he gives him like really weird teeth.
And he's like a hick.
Yes, he's like a hick and like pretty dumb.
It's really good.
It's very, very funny. And also it should be noted that when like, cause they do the back and forth storytelling, but then they like the episode continues on and it is Scully's version that was correct.
But shocking.
Shocking. One of my very favorite parts of that episode is that in Scully narrating, Mulder is just like her partner as you see him in the show. He is normal. He is a competent human being. And then in Mulder's version of events, Mulder is like clueless. He's like an idiot.
Oh, it's so good.
And it's him telling that version of himself where he just like doesn't really know what to do.
I mean, imagine you had your own Scully. You would probably feel like that.
Yes, right?
You know constantly what I mean?
You'd be like, look at my partner who literally every person is in love with. We've all known, I've talked on many episodes, how literally every single character who ever encounters Scully is in love with her. As they should be, quite frankly.
Obviously.
But like they all are.
Yeah.
Simply they all are.
Simply.
All the way up through Reyes.
Yeah.
And up to and including.
Yes.
Anyways, they're all in love. One of my very favorite moments ever is like when Mulder comes back after Doggett's been there for a while and like Scully is so happy and Doggett just has a real sad moment because you're like, obviously he was in love with Scully. Anyways.
Can we pause to talk about what an incredible actress Gillian Anderson is?
I mean, just she's for a moment. So great.
And human being.
Yes.
She's so weird and wonderful and I love her.
Yes.
And this show, I mean, she started the show when she was 25
I know.
Years old.
And she's so good. And she's like, She's gorgeous. I could look at her endlessly because her face is perfect.
She's one of the most beautiful women in history.
Yes. She's incredible. Yeah. Anyways, she's great.
And
she's
so happy that she continued to have a really banging career after this. Now Sex Education, The Fall. If you haven't seen The Fall, it's excellent. If you love serial killer shows,
I couldn't handle that show.
It's very spooky.
It was too spooky for me.
She's really cool in it.
Yeah.
And you know, David didn't really have as much of the acting chops that she did, but
that's true.
You forgive him quite generously for it.
That's kind of his vibe.
Yeah. You know, he's a guy.
Anyways, she's just, anyways, so Bad Blood, obviously great, but that's like not really a, you know, like that's not really a spicy take.
Not a hot take, but
exactly.
A good take.
We don't need to talk about it
a
bunch.
It's a correct take.
Just because it's so, like, it's a light episode. It's so funny. I love the dual narratives. Like, I love that, I love using that, like, little game.
Yeah.
It's great. It's very fun. But my third one is a spicier take.
Okay.
But you go first.
All right. So my second most favorite, which is tied really, is Musings of a Cigarette Smoking Man.
Wow.
Do you know this one?
Oh my gosh, yes, because I make fun of a great episode, but I also make fun of the fact that if there's been an assassination, he did it.
Absolutely. This is season 4, episode 7. I love the mythology episodes, as you know, and this one is like deep in mythology, but not really necessarily the main thread of the mythology, but the mythology behind the cigarette smoking man, the mysterious man who has appeared since episode 1 through all of them just standing in a corner smoking a cigarette.
Yes.
It gets deep into his story and where he comes from and what he's done in his life, or does it? Who knows?
The answer is he's assassinated everyone
who's
been assassinated.
He's famously, as a young man, doesn't smoke, never touches the things. But he is assigned to assassinate JFK, and that's when he takes it up. And it was a fascinating look at that piece of history, like told through what if this is how it kind of sort of went down. He ends up assassinating Martin Luther King Jr. He ends up assassinating the first alien.
To be clear, because he hates communists.
Yes, because he hates communists.
They really had to work around that one. That's one of my favorite parts of that episode is where they're like, okay, look, he's going to assassinate Martin Luther King, but he has to do it for reasons that
aren't racism.
Not racism.
Yes. Yeah. They bend over a little backwards on that one. Yeah. But it's just such a fun and interesting dip into history's famous assassinations. It really sparked my interest in conspiracy theories surrounding the JFK assassination. It was a wonderful deep dive for me to go on in college. And interesting about, you know, stuff with MLK that the government was involved with, which is truly quite terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, writing him notes trying to get him to commit suicide.
Absolutely.
It was real, you know? And so it sparked my love of looking into that kind of stuff from the 60s. And for that, I thank it. And I just love the character of the cigarette smoking man as well. I have a real thing for old, sad, lonely men in shows. So like,
I was going to say, don't end the sentence. You got to make sure. Where are you on that sentence?
Immediate. I would put Poirot in that category for sure.
Yeah.
It's kind of just a really sad loner who has a genius that he has to deal with. And CSM kind of reminds me of that a little bit. And it was just a really fun, interesting look at his episode. He's trying to write a book his whole life. He wants to quit doing this, but he keeps getting rejected because his book's awful.
His book's, I do love that.
And then one day someone's like, well, publish it. And he's like, yay, I'm going to quit my job. And he writes his resignation letter to whatever, I don't know what he has to resign from.
That secret circle of men. Excuse me, secret circle of of manipulators.
And, like, the manipulators are like, who do you want, like, for the Oscars this year? And he's like, I don't care. And he's like, but the Bills never win the Super Bowl, not while I'm alive.
That's right.
And I'm like, what are you residing
also, that
from? Part,
that's also one of my favorite parts of that episode, which is that they are, every conspiracy behind, yes. is that you think is, like, that could be true is true, yes, including and they're they doing pick it. The winners yeah. and they pick the Super Bowl winners. And it's these guys.
Oh, it's so beautiful. Yeah, and then he finally gets accepted, but they print it all wrong, and he hates it, and he rips up his resignation letter and goes back to yeah. to his work in the dark dealings of wherever the hell he comes from. I yep. don't know. So I truly love that episode. It just yeah. Really speaks to my soul. Anyway.
And, you know, we've talked a lot about you love the JFK assassination stories.
Yeah. Yep.
And my family is obsessed with Jack Ruby.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the man who shot Lee Harvey Oswald.
I mean, it's fascinating.
It is absolutely fascinating. My mom and I have talked on many occasions about whether Jack Ruby was intending to go and shoot Lee Harvey Oswald or not. And the significance of the fact that he brought his favorite dachshund in the car with him.
I mean, it's the details around yes. it are bizarre.
Which is either, right, like some people are like, oh, he wouldn't have brought his dog if he was gonna go assassinate someone. And then other people are like, no, he put the dog in the car so that it wasn't at home, right, so that someone would find it.
He wanted the dog to see.
No, that someone would like, so it wasn't in his apartment not getting fed. So yeah. that someone would be like, oh, you got to go to Jack Ruby's car. They'd see the dog in there and the dog would get rescued.
Oh, I see. Well, that could be.
Anyways, we talk about it a lot.
I mean, I love 60s politics, full stop. So like I could go on forever. The military absolutely hated JFK and the way that he handled a lot of situations. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Love yeah. that episode. It's very silly. I'm yeah. going to add that caveat. What else you got on your list here?
Okay, so this is also one of my very favorites. I actually haven't watched it in a while. It's a season one, episode 13. And this one is usually, it's right. It
What's
does
this
get
one
accolades.
Called?
It's called Beyond the Sea.
Yes.
I love this episode. I think it's so striking. It's one of the episodes that I think about the most, honestly. Yeah. Like there's a lot of, right. Like I love Bad Blood. I love Postmodern Prometheus, but in terms of how much I think about it and I think about like just the human emotions that form like the crux of the problems in this is as fascinating to me as Clyde Bruckman. Like this is up
yeah,
there with that.
Yeah.
It is so fascinating to me. So this is the one where at the start of the episode, Scully's dad dies.
Yep.
And
she and her dad were very close.
And she and her dad, yes, were specifically like very close. And she is very shaken by it. And like she has like this like vision of like right before he dies, she like wakes up and sees a vision of him in a chair in her living room.
Yeah.
And then gets the call, which is like very important to this. And so there's the other part of this, right? So that's like the kind of like cold open part of it. And then there is a couple that's kidnapped at the same time. And there's a serial killer that Mulder helped catch a while back named Luther Lee Boggs. And he like Mulder is like, so still like you still get a lot of his like anger in this episode.
Oh,
right?
I gotta watch this one
because he's like a heinous, right? He is.
Yeah.
He was a serial killer.
Yeah.
But Boggs is like, I have a psychic connection with the kidnapper of those two young
That's
people.
Right.
And if you commute my death sentence, I will tell you how to find them. But Mulder, who is, and this is like the first episode where they really play with Mulder and Scully swapping, like Mulder is skeptical, refuses to believe him, despite all the other stuff that Mulder believes. Right. Mulder is like, absolutely not. Like, you're just trying to get out of this. This is like the worst person. He's trying to play me, right? His entire, like all the time, he's just playing a game with me. And Scully is like, people's lives are on the line. And then they like, Scully visits Boggs and he drip feeds them some information as they go, right?
Yeah.
To show that he does seem to kind of know. And Mulder the whole time is like, no, he could have figured it out by this, or he could have figured it out by this. But Boggs knows that like Scully and her dad, like their song was Beyond the Sea.
Yep.
And that like obviously, you know, she like that like freaks her, not freaks her out, but like she believes that Boggs does have this psychic connection for whatever reason, right? Yeah,
it's a bit, it's, she's at the right moment in her life where exactly. this can impact her.
Yeah, and it's in part because of the death of her father and Boggs kind of sense like having this connection.
Yeah.
And she's like, I believe that he does know. And so there's like a whole thing, right? Like being like, hey, maybe we can commute this, maybe not anyways. Like he ends up telling them where they are. Anyways, Boggs is like, I can contact your father. I can give you one last message if you come to my execution. But she does not go. It's just fascinating. And she goes at the end of the episode, she tells Mulder that she believes that Boggs really did just orchestrate it all and did not like just knew. Oh, yeah. Their theory was that like he knew the kidnapper, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And had helped them orchestrate it, or that he was giving the kidnapper information and had planned it. And Scully just like has like this crisis. Anyways, it's like.
It's so interesting to see Scully's crisis of faith, which is a scientific yes. crisis of faith, too, in this episode.
Exactly. I think that is like that's one of the things that strikes me. And because it's so emotional for her, right?
Yeah.
That it's specifically about this guy's like connection to her father, or like, you know, his purported connection. It's like the one thing, right? She's like, oh, he could have orchestrated all of this stuff. But how does he know about that song?
Yeah.
Like that song that's our thing. And it's just so, I just love the, like I said, like the conundrum at the heart of it, which is that for Mulder, it's like, right? Like everyone has these choices where it's like Mulder cannot see past his hatred of Boggs to help the people who have been kidnapped, yeah, right?
Right.
He hates him so much that even though it would save two lives, he cannot commute that man's death sentence.
Yeah.
And cannot agree to it, which it's like, oh, and it's also fascinating to me because Mulder especially,
he should know.
You all also know that, like, I talk a lot about how, especially in the early seasons, Mulder is actually fairly ACAB.
yeah, we had an episode
about
that. And
so it's a fascinating episode, and it's one of the first instances of him having, like, a really strong identification with, like, the policing, like, yeah, construct yeah. in the United States of, like, yes, like, this, like, he has a death sentence, and he deserves it. And he can't even see past, like, that anger with him. And Scully, like, being in this vulnerable place where usually she's that person and she can see past it.
Yeah.
And then Boggs being like, right, having that like this place that's like, oh, is he sincere in that he has this connection? And if he does, why won't he, like, will he just do the right thing and save these people? And it's like, well, he's a serial, like, is that who yeah. he is? Like, yeah. no, he's shown that that's not who he is, but will he do it? And right. It's just like, I think that the dynamics in it are fascinating. It's sad. The stuff about Scully handling like her grief around her father's passing is just so touching. It's so good. Like I said, I just think about like in terms of episodes that I just think about a lot. I think about Beyond the Sea a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's a really like twisted and also beautiful episode, which is so cool.
And I think the X-Files has such a unique ability to do episodes that fit so many, check so many boxes. They get to live in a serious, twisted, weird place, a very happy, silly place, a very intimate and vulnerable place in a way that a series of TV just normally doesn't get to do, because normally you have to be one thing.
Yeah.
And they get to be all things all the time.
All right, Maria, what's your number three?
All right. So this is very difficult for me. I couldn't really pick a number three because I just have like a huge list of more yeah. that I love. But I'm just going to talk briefly about Memento Mori, which is another Scully episode where she is diagnosed with cancer yeah. Based on her abduction. And she can't deal with it. Like, she doesn't believe that she was abducted. She has no memories from it, but she is facing terminal cancer that all these other women had yeah. who also believe that they were abducted. They all had implants in their neck, which were taken out. This will become important later. This is right after the episode Never Again, which is another one of my all-time favorites, with a tattoo that's a living tattoo on a guy's arm.
Yeah.
And Scully like falls for this guy with this weird living tattoo that tells him to do stuff. The tattoo, by the way, voiced by Jodie Foster.
Yes.
Which I think is
very cool.
I mean, yeah, so cool.
Really cool.
And I love Never Again because in that episode, Scully really finds herself, which is that, you know, sometimes she's really sidelined by Mulder.
Yes.
And he treats her kind of like S-H-I-T a lot. And that episode, she's like, you know what? I'm kind of done with that. I'm kind of done like just doing your bidding, all your crazy ideas you have about what to solve. I'm going to follow my own path. I need to follow my own path. I need to be my own person within this kind of weird codependent relationship that we've developed. And at the end of the episode, she gets a tattoo of an Ouroboros on her back, which I think is very cool.
Yeah.
And I love her finding that for herself.
Never get a tattoo in a place that's that poorly lit, though.
Yeah.
Just going to put that out there for all of you.
It was a very dark tattoo parlor.
If you are going to a tattoo parlor and there is basically no lighting, don't get a tattoo there. That's just all I have to say about that.
So that episode, great, goes into this episode. She gets cancer. It's sad. Mulder has to reckon with the fact that he kind of is a dump to her a lot of the time.
Yes.
And he's like, oh my God, I'm going to lose this person that I've taken for granted for 4 years to just be with me on this wild alien goose chase who does all the dirty work.
He takes her so for granted. It like...
You know? And she's in the office doing 100 autopsies in a day or whatever.
I mean, and we've got, we had the full autopsy.
Yeah, the autopsy.
We had autopsy month because there's so many of them.
and so he has to have the realization that he could lose that, and seeing him kind of panic and really have an incredible breakdown about it, I think is really excellent to see on screen. We get a heist with the lone gunman again. There's hybrid twin alien boys running around, haunted hospitals, like we mentioned, galore. And she gets an Emmy for this episode, Gillian Anderson.
Does.
Which deserves
the hell out of it.
But yeah, I could have 100 on this list.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, we haven't even talked about like some of the best.
I know.
So we could talk about, like you were saying, like 50 episodes each.
Yes.
Because we haven't even talked about the shooting in, like, what's the one where Mulder's in the Bermuda Triangle?
Triangle.
Like, the shots.
Double camera shots.
Yes, the double camera shots in Triangle.
As they're going through time.
Incredible.
Also, I was a kid who was obsessed with the Bermuda Triangle. I found a book in it at the library. And I mean, like, this episode just was like, baby Maria's, like, crack. Like, I was like, yes, absolutely give me a Bermuda Triangle episode any day of the month. We haven't talked about one of the new ones, which I think is really good. Mulder and Scully meet the Weremonster, starring Rhys Darby. So check that one out. One of the newer episodes, you know, are kind of like not as great as the older ones, but that one is truly excellent.
Although you all know that I'm generally actually like a season 8 proponent.
Oh, you're a season 8er. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that.
9, no. I'm not saying it's not like you as classically good as like Heyday, but I think that it is actually like season 8 is better than you remember it. You know, I say that every time, everyone.
Every day.
Season 8 is better than you remember it. There's some really good episodes.
We haven't talked about Ice, which is the Thing ripoff.
Oh, I love, yes, I love Ice.
And it was David Duchovny's first favorite episode.
It's so good.
He loved that, filming that one.
And obviously, I love the Thing episode.
Of course. How could you not?
So many good ones.
Anyway, we have so many weeks to do of the show that we can just keep
going. Yeah, we can just keep going. Maybe we'll come back to you on our next episode of the podcast.
Yeah, with more next week.
Now, of course, it's time for Mulder Text Theater, where we read the log line of an episode. Maria will give you a one-liner that Mulder would say, and I would tell you Scully's autopsy findings from that episode.
Brilliant.
All right. So let's see. I'm going to pick one. This is season 3, episode 14, Grotesque.
Ooh.
The agents assist Mulder's former mentor with a case involving a serial killer who claims to be possessed by a demonic force.
Ooh. I'm 666 of this serial killer.
An iconic Mulder line.
You remember when he said that.
Yes. And of course, this is the one where Scully like pulls back the sheet to do the autopsy and finds a pentagram like sigil emblazoned on the chest.
Absolutely.
And then she tries to pull it away and she's like, this flesh hasn't been burnt. It's been, I don't, like, she can't
it's
figure
been,
out
I
what
don't
happened. It's been, I don't know. Yeah.
All right, how about this one? Season 7, episode 8, The Amazing Malini. Mulder and Scully investigate the apparent murder of a magician who was decapitated just minutes after he was able to perform the trick of turning his head around 360 degrees.
I remember the autopsy findings of this one because they were that he had been dead. He had been dead for a long time.
I only barely remember this episode.
I liked this episode more than I think the average viewer of the X-Files.
Yeah, I feel like pretty certain that Mulder would have said at some point during this episode, now you see it, now you don't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Or something to that effect.
All right, let's see. How about season...
I'm just picking random ones.
All right. Season 5, episode 11, Kill Switch. The murder of a computer programmer leads Mulder and Scully to the discovery of a sentient computer program loose on the internet that has targeted its creator and it's trying to find the kill switch.
Mulder for sure goes, he got control alt deleted. Even though, was that what you used back then? Yeah, I think it was.
It probably was. This is the one where Scully performs an autopsy, and when she opens him up, she's like, it's not veins, it's wiring.
That's a great one. Okay, what about this one? Oh, God, there's some gross ones here.
Really gross ones.
This is another one of my all-time favorites. I don't know German, so my apologies. Die Verlizette. About the agents investigate a murder in a small town populated by devil worshippers who run a high school. They run, to all intents and purposes, it's a pretty normal high school.
Yeah, it's a normal high school.
They just happen to be run in by a demon cult. Yeah.
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 In this one, Scully performs an autopsy and discovers that someone who looked very old was actually a high schooler.
Oh, and I'm pretty sure that in this episode, Mulder said, what did he say?
You got high schooled. They definitely schooled in that manner.
They definitely did. And the woman who plays kind of the main devil worshiper in this, she's so creepy, everybody. Great performance from this rando, I have to say.
All right, season 4, episode 6. This one's a real bad one.
Ooh, okay.
This one's Sanguinarium, which is Mulder and Scully suspect a supernatural culprit is responsible for a series of murders in a hospital's plastic surgery unit.
Wow.
Scully performs an autopsy and says, this woman's face was not her own.
And Mulder definitely says, this looks like this guy got rhinoplastied to the wall because some guy's like up on the wall with surgical tape, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
For sure. Okay, but what about this one? Season 3, episode 6, Too Shy. Shy, overweight women are being pursued online by a suitor who courts them with Italian poetry.
Scully performs an autopsy and finds an original Shakespearean folio inside of a woman's chest cavity.
And Mulder says, Mamma mia, that's a good poem. I apologize to all Italians.
Yes, as you should, frankly, as you should. Well, everyone.
Ah, what a fabulous episode of our show.
What a great episode. I'm so glad that we finally got around to the best of the best.
Yeah, I know. We've done 12 years and we still haven't covered that. Unbelievable.
I know. But, you know, we really liked it. We like to tease out the more subtle things.
Yes.
Of course, next week we're going to be talking about Alex Krycek, hero or villain.
Oh, my God. Alex Krycek. I haven't thought of it. I think about that name every week, actually.
Yeah,
so.
As you should. Alex Krycek. He just show up sometimes.
And also, the week after that, we're going to talk about being an actor in the 90s in Vancouver. Would they let anybody on the show? The answer is sometimes.
It seems like yes.
Yes, they did. Did you have to know how to act? Not really.
No.
thank you all for being with us here on this episode. We're recording this April 1st, but that I'm glad you know that we wouldn't do a trick to you.
No, of course not.
We would only give you what
we
you want.
We would only give you the best of the best on April 1st.
Absolutely.
Thank you once again to all of our patrons of the show. If you want to chat about any X-Files at all in our Discord, we love hearing everyone's theories on the different characters.
Oh, for sure.
Everyone's pitches for if we were to revive the series, what kind of episodes could we have, all of it and more. So become a patron and get to join that Discord. Thank you again to Aaron, William, and Jimmy.
Become part of the crew at patreon.com/glhfmagic. Lots of perks, lots of different tiers for you to join at. Thank you as well to Card Kingdom sponsoring our show. We don't know why. Cardkingdom.com.
Really grateful for it
/glhf. And now as we close every episode with our mantra,
the truth is out there.
That's right.